Hello, everyone, and welcome to the September edition of the IHS Market Lithium Chemicals podcast. I'm Nick Kovacs, the Service Director for Lithium and Battery Materials, and I'm joined here today by our global team based out of Houston, London, and Beijing. It's been a bit of a challenging month again for producers, with lower material prices continuing to impact expansion plans. And longer-term demand forecasts still remain positive, but in the near term, we are seeing some continued declines in Chinese EV demand in response to subsidy adjustments made in June. Now, as if oversupply and potential declining demand in the face of contracting global expansion were not enough, Argentinian producers will now face capital controls on foreign currency and dividend distributions outside the country. The capital controls were first implemented in 2012, and the impact of them was a 50% decline in investments in the mining sector. They were since removed in 2016. However, history does often repeat itself, so we'll be watching activities in the country closely. Now, on that note, let's mix it up this week a bit and start with supply. So Priscilla, why don't you kick us off?
Thanks, Nick. For this past month, we saw lithium prices to continue to decline. Major lithium producers buffered their losses with higher sales volumes and revised their lithium expansion strategies. Expansion plans are being halted or delayed to accommodate for the oversupply of spodumene concentrate and lower demand of lithium hydroxide and lithium carbonate. Owing to their high-quality assets, diverse business portfolios, and high-purity specifications, major producers like Albemarle and SQM were able to still invest in other assets, like Ganfeng Lithium's venture into solid-state batteries. Albemarle is expanding its facility in Chile and constructing a lithium hydroxide refinery in Kemerton with mineral resources, despite delaying all work associated with 125,000 metric tons of previously announced capacity additions. Albemarle and Tianqi Lithium's Greenbushes asset in Australia completed its Stage 2 expansion project, but will halt the Stage 3 expansion to align with the conversion capabilities of its customers. SQM will also continue to expand its production facility in Chile to recover lost market share. Perhaps owing to the low operating cost of brine operations, Albemarle and SQM were able to compensate for low lithium prices that resulted in revenue losses. Tianqi Lithium and Ganfeng Lithium both announced their low quarterly profit losses, but continue to plan for long-term demand growth like Tianqi Lithium's offtake agreement drafted with LG Chem. However, the five Australian producers that all started production recently suffered losses and had to halt many of their long-term plans. Many of them had started production in 2018 at the end of 2018, and one of them, like Galaxy Resources, had started in 2017. Pilbara Minerals cut its sales forecast and spending plans by slowing its expansion. Altura Mining, despite strong sales, temporarily halted trading recently owing to its shares falling 30% in 2 days. Altura also terminated its offtake agreement officially with JNR Optimum Energy. Alita Resources in Bald Hill had been placed in the hands of administrators owing to its sole offtake partner's financial difficulties, falling lithium prices, and hefty debt levels. Galaxy Resources bought Alita's $28.8 million debt and became its largest equity holder. Galaxy also impaired the value of its Mount Catlin mine by $123.4 million and reduced the carrying value of the mine by 57%. A further $13.6 million impairment was recorded against Galaxy's inventory stockpiles, partially due to the oversupply of spodumene. Finally, Mineral Resources revised its partnership with Albemarle to give up 60% of its Wodgina mine stake to Albemarle to hold a 40% stake in the Kemerton lithium hydroxide facility. Both companies have postponed their plans to build a lithium hydroxide refinery in Wodgina to conserve capital. Recently, even Tianqi Lithium announced that it would delay the second stage of its expansion in Kwinana, Australia, for lithium hydroxide. They recently came online for their first stage in Kwinana. Further details of these highlights from this month are found in our monthly service report. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, Priscilla. Let's go to London next with Lucas. Can you bring us the latest on demand, please?
China's automotive sales have experienced 14 consecutive months of decline, but EV sales for long has managed to buck this trend. This changed after China's new energy vehicle subsidies phase out. The EV sales saw the first monthly decline in July, which only became steeper in August, decreasing 16% from a year earlier to 85,000 vehicles sold. Sales of BYDs, China's biggest EV maker in EVs and plug-in hybrids category, slumped 23% month over month to 16,719 units in August. Did these data make authorities in Beijing to rethink and readjust the survival of the fittest strategy? State Council already said that the local governments should encourage the purchase of new energy vehicles. To soften hard landing, Beijing even gave a green light to city-level governments to support purchase of new electric vehicles with separate credit schemes. In longer term, decision makers are also planning to revise country-wide credit policies for a new energy vehicles during 2021-23 horizon. Just to remind you, the draft plan issued in July this year aims to increase the new energy vehicles credit scheme to 14% in 2021, 60% in 2022, and 18% in 2023 from 10% this year. Further, China's policymakers are considering introduction of experimental pilot zones where vehicles with internal combustion engine will be banned, as a very small but significant step in preparation for the total fossil fuel phase-out. China has a tradition in limiting daring social experiments to territorial zones. In fact, the development of special economic zones initiated by Xi Jinping in coastal areas opened up a way to market economy in China. So despite the declining EV sales and low price environment in lithium market, it is important to remember the apparent Chinese government's readiness to further support EVs adoption if needed. Another point to keep in mind is that if we look at numbers in perspective of the year, not just last 2 months, the trend is very positive. As China's new energy vehicles output rose by 31.6% from a year earlier to 799,000 units in January-August, with sales increasing by 32% to 793,000 units in the same period. Another interesting demand driver on hugely important Chinese market is a target set by Ministry of Industry and Information Technology to build over 50,000 5G base stations across 50 cities still in 2019. The question remains what percentage of those will be powered by new and what percentage by reused batteries. As so far, the 4G stations built by China Tower across the country has been a single largest source of demand for reused power batteries. Data from the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology shows that there were over 7 million mobile communication base stations across the country by the end of June, with 4G base stations accounting for around 61%. So just think about the scale here.
Thanks, Lucas. Now, Lily Wu recently attended a conference on recycling in China. We're following the global lithium battery recycling sector closely now, as we see this becoming a significant source of material supply as vehicles reach end of life. Lily, can you share with us some highlights from your meetings?
Sure, Nick. There are quite a few takeaways from the 2019 International China Battery Recycling Conference. I will summarize a few for you. Lithium-ion batteries can be recycled at the end of life for both portable, rechargeable batteries and EV batteries. However, for EV batteries, they usually return 70 to 80% capacity at the end of life retirement, which can be reused for energy storage. So not all EV batteries at the end of life will end up being recycled in the conventional sense. For recycling, lithium and cobalt are the main target metals. For the EU market, by 2030, there is a potential for recycling to have a significant contribution to EV manufacturing. It was stated that recycled cobalt could contribute more than half of the supply into EV battery manufacturing capacity versus 17% today. Lithium could contribute to 25% of inputs, to 9% today. Recycling can potentially reduce cost of battery by 5 to 30% by using recycled cathode material. Reuse or secondary life of battery is also a significant market. China Tower is the biggest company in this sector. The biggest concern in applying retired EV batteries to storage batteries relies in safety, including cell safety, battery transportation, and battery storage safety issues. Currently, this problem is tackled through safety testing of each retired cell battery, but a more advanced way could be a battery manufacturer's to open its battery communication protocol so that recycler can have access to battery historical data and generate reliable battery in storage system. We believe historical data analysis and judgment are more forward-looking. A reliable, traceable battery database tracking batteries from production to the end of life and would provide supply chain transparency, reduce costs in secondary use.
Well, thanks for that summary, Lily. Now, to draw a parallel, nearly 99% of the lead that goes into lead-acid batteries for vehicles today is recycled. While 99% is a long ways away for lithium, once we have more vehicles reaching end of life, recycling is going to be a significant source of raw material. This is one of the reasons our team is researching this segment of the value chain. We plan to share that in our syndicated report in the coming months. So with that, thanks everyone again for listening, and we'll be back again next month.